Hi, and welcome to today's episode of Over and Under, where we take one film that's underrated and one film that's overrated, and we review them. My name's Kareem Mohsen, and I'm going to be joined today by Michael Manziello and Oktay Ege-Kozak. The underrated film for this week is the film starring Forest Whitaker called Ghost Dog, and it's my choice. We're focusing on assassin movies this week, and I chose this as an underrated assassin movie. I just love this movie. It's really, like, stylish. It's got hip-hop music, which I love, by the RZA. It's directed by Jim Jarmusch, who's one of my favorite directors. And Forest Whitaker is such an unusual choice for a stealth samurai assassin because he's actually quite, you know, chubby. And I just think that he nails the role. He's this very austere character, and he lives by this samurai code. And he's very strict adherence to the principles of the samurai way of life. But the film's kind of whimsical, and it blends all these different genres in a very interesting way, and in a completely unique way, in the way that only someone like Jim Jarmusch could do. And if you really break it down, it's like about a samurai, and his best friend is an ice cream seller who can't even speak the same language as him. The mafia characters are these unusual, dark, underworld characters, but at the same time, they listen to Public Enemy, and you can see them rapping. And so it takes these stereotypes that you might expect to find in a film like Wanted, and it plays around with them and mixes them together and creates this fantasy world that actually seems to work. All these incongruous pieces and factors seem to be put together in a way that seems seamless, and I just love it. I get lost in the story every time I watch it. So for me, it's really an example of a film that was made at a fraction of the cost of a film like Wanted, and yet the results are that much more, at the end of the day, that much more appealing, enjoyable, and exciting to watch.
Yeah, this is my favorite Jim Jarmusch film, simply because I love seeing art house directors tackle kind of more conventional genres and to see what they can bring to it. And it definitely follows a typical kind of assassin movie revenge action film structure, but it's done in this incredibly fresh way. And if you just think about the concept a little bit, this, you know, chubby black guy, Forest Whitaker is definitely not, you know, a big action figure, but it does a really good job with taking this concept and making it very, very fresh and interesting.
Yeah, I just finished watching this about 10 minutes before we started recording, and my initial impression was like that I hated it. But after about maybe 25 minutes into the movie, I started to really appreciate what Kareem was saying, like how it was just subverting all these expectations, and I really enjoyed that aspect of it. And yeah, the Forest Whitaker casting seems like a bizarre, insane choice, but he is great in it. And I can't imagine anyone else playing that part now.
Yeah, when you look at it from the outside, it's a really stupid concept. It's this guy in the contemporary world who acts like a samurai, and he uses his gun the way a samurai master uses a sword. He even spins it around before he puts it back in his pocket, and he has a retainer like any samurai that he is completely loyal to, which is this kind of mafioso goomba character. Just off of that concept, you would imagine that to be a terrible movie, but there's so much freshness and energy to it that I really love.
Yeah, and Jim Jarmusch is kind of masterful. He always gives us access to other cultures and other worlds, and kind of shows that there's not, even though there's so much difference between these varying cultures, there's also a common ground. And I think that's beautifully illustrated in that scene where his best friend, who is, I guess, from the Ivory Coast, or is French, is looking down at the boat that the guy has built on the next floor down. And they're both speaking different languages, but they're talking about exactly the same thing. And they don't even understand each other, but they're best friends. And yeah. Then they're shouting down to the guy who's building the boat. And he's like, I can't understand a word you're saying, like I'm Italian or something. And it's, you know, it's just this way of representing. He can bring together all these, again, seemingly incongruous elements and make them really work well together and show us that there's like a common kind of human connection between us all.
Yeah, I just love that dynamic between him and his best friend, and I just love these little touches where the guy says something in French, and even though Forest Whitaker doesn't understand, he says the exact same thing. And I thought that was really clever, and it's it's just like the rest of the movie, nothing about like that concept of, oh, they speak different languages yet they're best friends. On the offset, it would just sound ridiculous, but it really does work in the film, and so does the samurai concept and everything else. It's just done in this very kind of interesting way.
Yeah, my initial, like I was saying, when I first saw that him reading the samurai book and the titles come up on the screen with the quote from the book, I was like, oh my God, this is horrible. But it comes up, it comes back and back, and every time it's like a little smoother, and then you get into that pace and the rhythm of it, and it seems so natural after a while that you're like, of course he's living by a samurai code. He's an assassin. It's the only way to be.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that way it totally works. Something that was really interesting to me personally is because I'm such a huge fan of like Akira Kurosawa and a lot of old school samurai films, that I noticed that the best samurai films that come from Japan are always about Ronin, which is a masterless samurai. They are more individualistic. The samurais in the Ronin in Seven Samurai, for example, or the same character in Yojimbo is a Ronin. They kind of work for themselves, and it was interesting for me to see a true samurai film, which is about someone who considers himself a samurai with a retainer that he's very, very loyal to. To see that in this kind of a concept, in this kind of frame, was very refreshing.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. I never thought about that. So it's kind of cool. We all agree on this, that this is a pretty interesting film. And, you know, I guess I would ask myself, since I'm asking the questions, what was my favorite scene in the movie? And I think I already mentioned the scene with the boat, which really I enjoyed. And then obviously the scene with the bear, where he kills the two rednecks who've just hunted the bear. I love that scene. I'm not entirely sure why, but I think that somehow that bear represents him and he represents the bear. And I found it very gratifying to see those two rednecks get shot.
Yeah, there's definitely that gratification about that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one of my favorite scenes in it as well. My favorite is also connected to the bear metaphor, which is the part where he talks about bears with his best friend, and he gives this entire metaphor about the character being kind of like a bear and living alone and surviving alone and being its own creature. And he gives this perfect kind of analogy of his character, but of course Forrest Whitaker can't understand a word of it. It's only the audience that can understand that and relate. And I think there's something very kind of poetic and pretty about that.
Yeah, my favorite scene is tied to that too, because the little girl is in that scene. And I think most of the time when you see a little kid in an action movie like this, it just seems like a desperate attempt to like add some humanity to the character, but it just seems so natural. And the girl and Forrest Whitaker's interaction was so just pleasant and nice. And they seem to have this instant chemistry that you don't see a lot of. And I just enjoyed every scene that she was in.
Yeah, and it's somehow bizarre to think that, you say Ege, you know, you're saying that these things on the outside, if someone told you, hey, this film is about this, this, and this, you'd say that's never going to work. Or if any other director had done that, that would have been a disaster. But there's something about Jim Jarmusch that he's able to meld those things together. And honestly, I find myself just getting lost in the worlds that he creates. So yeah. That scene with the girl in the park and they're sharing different book titles is just really refreshing. And who else has ever done anything like that in a movie?
Yeah, and I like how much patience he has for that scene, because they show maybe four or five different books and they talk about all of them. In a lesser director's film, they would just mention like two and it'd be really heavy handed, but it just felt natural.
Cool. And so are there any scenes? I mean, for me, there aren't any particular scenes that I don't like about the movie. I was wondering for you guys, were there any scenes that you felt were just totally out of place?
Yeah, the inner titles, like Mike mentioned, are, you get used to them, definitely. But the first time I saw this, I saw it when it first came out, it was like 12 years ago or something. That bothered me a lot more back then, but it didn't bother me as much this time. But especially near the end of the movie, those kind of inner titles come out superimposed with the image, and I think that might have helped out a little bit. But when it just fades to black and you just have to read this one paragraph of text before you get back into the movie, it was a little bit, it's a little bit off-putting the first like 20 minutes or so, but then you get used to it.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't find that jarring at all, but like it seems like both of you had an issue with that, so that's cool. Kind of you notice these elements can throw various people off, but for me it was just I'm interested in those particular. What are they called? I mean, they're just little passages from the book of.
They're like
the Samurai Code.
They're almost like silent movie intertitles.
Right, right.
Yeah.
I just thought there was really profound wisdom in them, but I mean, maybe they didn't have to be so heavy-handed as to put it out in front of the screen. So
yeah,
I didn't find it jarring.
I think, like as I said earlier, it just seemed like in the beginning, it's like, what is this? It just seems so pretentious. But by the end, I was looking forward to the next one. It's like, oh, it's going to totally inform what I'm about to see.
So you began to enjoy it after a while. And it's
yeah,
true.
Me too.
Honestly, it's anyone else doing this, it would fall into pretentious degree. But he holds it nicely. Mm-hmm. And so for me, you know, again, is there anything about the movie that I would change? And I would say no, because I don't see it as the kind of film that I see it as the product of someone's unique creative imagination. I don't see it as a film that was structured in any particular way to create elicit a particular response within the audience. I see that as a genuine creative piece of art that only one person could ever come up with. And it's not something that could be easily replicated by anyone else. And if anyone did try and replicate it, chances are the film would probably fall flat. So for me, it's like it's a unique expression of that director's creative vision, and I wouldn't want to change anything about it. And in particular, what I loved, something I didn't mention at the beginning was that the soundtrack for me by the RZA was just absolutely mesmerizing. And I know that he had approached the RZA and said, hey, I'm doing this movie about samurais and I want you to come up with a soundtrack. And apparently the RZA went away to the studio, created a bunch of beats and came back and showed it to him. And the guy was like, Jim Jarmusch said, you know what? That's the kind of music you'd expect in a samurai movie. Can you create the kind of music that just, if you were to be creative about it and have free rein around it, what kind of music would you come up with? And the RZA went away and came back with this soundtrack, and Jim Jarmusch was like, that's exactly what I was looking for. And so when he's up on the roof and he's playing with the samurai sword, you know, and they're kind of like that faded effect with the slow shutter speed and the music's there and the pigeons, I just thought that was, like, absolutely mesmerizing.
Yeah, I think the thing about it that I really love about it is that, yeah, when you think about it, nothing about it should work. Is if you were a producer and someone came into your office and said, Forrest Whitaker is an action hero who's a samurai in a contemporary world and he uses guns instead of a knife and the whole soundtrack is by one of the guys from the Wu-Tang Clan, it just sounds ridiculous, but... when I think about it, apart from that little thing I mentioned about the intertitles, maybe it should have been just voiceover or it should have been done in a little bit more faster-paced way. But apart from that, I can't think of anything either.
One thing I would maybe take out is actually a scene that you liked, Kareem, which was the redneck scene. It just felt like a little tacked on because everybody he kills, he seems to have a reason to do it. And I mean... they are rednecks and racist rednecks, so they probably deserve to die. But it just didn't seem like it was somebody who had such a strict moral code. It didn't really fit with his character entirely.
Yeah, it almost feels like, I mean, from the perspective you're saying, it almost feels like that's the kind of obvious thing that another person would put in that type of film.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, in keeping with the freshness and the creativity, a scene like that would seem a bit obvious. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, I think, that makes sense to me, too, even though I enjoy the film because of the visceral reaction that you get out of, you just enjoy watching these idiots getting killed. But that's true. It doesn't completely fit with the character's strict moral code.
Yeah. And so if you were in the video store, can you think of a film that, if you're about to reach for this film, and you say, no, you know what? Choose Ghost Dog instead. If you're about to go for one film, choose Ghost Dog instead. Which film do you think you might recommend Ghost Dog over?
To me, the obvious choice is The Professional. It seems almost like the parallel story, practically. But in a much more artful way. And I enjoy The Professional a lot. I haven't seen it in a long time, but this had a lot more soul to it. You know, the characters seemed to have more motivation for what they were doing.
I guess I would disagree with you. Not, I mean, actually, The Professional was the first film that came to my mind as well. And I just think that they're both films about assassins who have relationships with small girls that are actually handled in brilliant ways, but are both seen through the lens, through very different lenses, but are both handled very effectively. Mm-hmm. Like, if I wanted to see like a real action film that's handled with style and finesse, I would go and see The Professional over Ghost Dog. Mm-hmm. Because the choreography with the action scenes and the relationship between Leon and Matilda, I think is again a relationship that could have gone very awry. I mean, there's some kind of a sexual relationship between like a girl she must be like 12 years old and a guy who's he's probably like 40 something, and handled wrongly, that could be offensive. But they do a beautiful job in that film. But I also think that Ghost Dog, sorry, I just finished by saying that Ghost Dog is, again, a film that handles that relationship beautifully, but the concept and the storyline is completely different. Again, whimsical. So I would watch both those films and say they're both excellent, but I would watch them for different reasons.
Yeah, that's what I would agree with you. Like, when I first saw The Professional, I was 15 years old or something, and I loved it at that time because it suited those, like, the things I wanted to see, like the slick action. And this one, as I get a little older, it has a little more depth that I mm-hmm. would like to see. So, yeah, exactly. I think they're equally good, but just appeal to different parts of
me. Professional is a film that I really like, but, yeah, it is more heavy-handed and a little bit more obvious. But I still enjoy that film a lot. I would pick, actually, if you want to see, if you're interested in, like, kind of a American version of a samurai story, I would say pick this instead of something stupid like The Last Samurai, which is completely condescending and, you know, it just retells the concept of like the white man savior who becomes, you know, samurai and saves this entire tribe, you know, the samurai tribe and village and all that. And instead of watching something like that, watch something like this that has an interesting take on the samurai.
Yeah, that's a great point. That film, The Last Samurai. I mean, I enjoy that film, but it's pure Hollywood.
Yeah,
and Tom Cruise, obviously. I would rather watch Forrest Whitaker as a samurai than Tom Cruise any day.
Yeah, if for whatever reason you go to the video store and you're like, I want to see an American samurai movie instead of Last Samurai, just pick this up.
Or actually, American samurai.
Is there? No, that's American Ninja.
There's American Samurai too.
Is there an American Samurai?
If there isn't, there should be.
Does it have Michael Dudikoff in it?
Michael Dudikoff.
Yes, that's the guy from American Ninja.
It is, I know. Yeah. I just love his last name, Dudikoff.
Dudikoff. That's true, that's the guy's actual last name.
All right, cool. Okay, so it looks like we all agreed about Ghost Dog. It seems like it's a film that we'd all recommend as an underrated film. So if you get the chance, go out and check it out if you haven't already seen it. It's a really great movie. So we are going to be following on with our overrated film of the week, which is Wanted, starring Angelina Jolie and James McAvoy. Reviewing the film today is Ege. Ege, take it away.
Yeah, I picked Wanted because I think not only this is a terrible action film, but it also harbors this idea that nothing is worse than being a loser. So if you have a mundane, boring life, you might as well go out and become like a ruthless serial killer who has no code and who just listens to, just takes orders from other people to kill people that you don't even know. So, yeah, I think we were talking about it before, and it tries to blend in like the stylistic supernatural action of The Matrix without having any kind of story aspect that supports that kind of supernatural elements going on. And it tries to blend in also like this gritty, more realistic style of like Fight Club. And in both cases, it completely fails miserably. And yeah, I think it's one of the worst films I've seen in the last 10 years.
Wow, that's, you don't like that film, clearly. Mike, what do you reckon?
I actually didn't have that many problems with it. I do agree it's a fairly stupid movie, but it just seemed on par with everyday kind of Hollywood action movies. And I'm sure there's movies that are a lot worse that just didn't quite rake in the money as much.
Yeah, for me, I mean, it was just, it looked like, you know, you see a film like The Matrix, and that's a brilliant, creative, inventive film about a guy whose life is going nowhere, or he doesn't realize that he has this dormant potential. And someone comes along and says, hey, listen, you know, you take this pill, you're about to go on the ride of your life. And it turns out that Neo is the savior of humanity instead of just a computer programmer. That's a cool twist. And then we've got Fight Club, and, you know, the guy's life, he's obsessed with IKEA furniture, and he's going to AA meetings in order to get, like, some kind of emotional connection with people. And he's a total loser. And he finds this group of people and this one charismatic guru in particular who changes his life. It's an awesome concept, awesome story. The books are amazing, and they took a risk by turning it into a film, and they did an incredible job. And then somewhere along the line, the writer of Wanted sees that and is like, yeah, I would love to do a film like that. But what he doesn't have is any creativity, originality, or skill as a writer. And so he comes up with this piece of shit movie that is really generic in every sense of the word. So for me, it's really, yeah, it's not the worst movie in the world. There's thousands of movies like it, but it's just another piece of shit to add to the long list.
Yeah, I mean, I hate it more because of what I said about its theme, and we were talking about this before, and I'm just going to go over this very quickly. It's because the director is Russian, and it definitely, the style of the film has this kind of gaudy, post-communist, super-capitalist Russia where everything is about materialism. You need to have stuff, and you need to be cool, and no matter what you do, even if you have to kill people indiscriminately, you have to get to that point, otherwise you're an absolute loser. And I just really hate that, and I think that's something that is just personal with me, because my in-laws are kind of like that since my wife is Russian and her family's Russian.
Certainly, I would never have read into it to that level, but it seems like you have some context which I don't really recognize. But yeah, if that's the case, I mean, I can certainly see there's a gaudy aspect to the film. And I've seen the two films that the guy did before, what they called Night Watch and Day Watch. And, you know, they start off as interesting for the first 5 minutes. I think me and you watched it, Mike, on the cinema that one time.
Yeah, we did see it.
We saw it in LA, didn't we? And it was just like, we kind of went out just afterwards going like, wow, that started off well and then turned into just an absolute debacle. And the only difference with Wanted is that Wanted never really started off well, so.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I completely agree with you guys that it's a really bad action film. And what the thing that we're talking about, The Matrix, is that, yeah, it is set up in this kind of science fiction supernatural world, and there's nothing like that in Wanted, yet it tries to get away with that aspect of it as well. But
I'd hate to be the person to defend this movie, but they do explain that, in that the people have their hearts beat extra fast, like a butterfly or like a hummingbird or something, and they can observe things. And to me, that's a big problem with the movie, is that they are always making excuses for everything. Like, you kill people because the message comes from a loom, and you can do this because of your heart is extra large or whatever. If it just did like you said and has that one lie that you can get away with in screenwriting and didn't try to explain everything, I think it would be better served by doing that.
Yeah, I think it just tries to do too much without having the responsibility of backing it up. I mean, they explain that heart rate thing, but how do you explain the guy at the beginning who can jump out of, you know, the window of the skyscraper and basically fly across? I mean, no matter how high your heart rate is, there's no way that's going to happen.
And there was another piece as well. There was this whole thing about, you know, the whole plot twist, and this is a spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't seen Wanted, but I'm just going to recommend that you don't watch it anyway. But it's basically the bad guy at the beginning turns out to be the good guy who turns out to be James McAvoy's father. But at the beginning of the film, the bad guy comes out and kills all these other people who end up being decoys for this James McAvoy's father. What you realize is that the good guy just set up all these other people as decoys in order to kill this one other guy. So he's kind of an asshole. Even though he turns out to be a good guy, he's still an asshole. So
everybody's kind of like that too.
Yeah, I guess they're assassins. Assassins don't think the same way.
Yeah, I guess that's true. But it's just that's that aspect of it. It's just that it has absolutely no tone or consistency. And that's the thing about it that really bothers me. And if it was a film that was forgotten right away and went into like kind of the bargain bins at like Best Buy or something, I think that would have been fine. Mm-hmm. But it got really good reviews, and a lot of people really loved this movie, and it made a lot of money. And so that's the thing about it that I find to be like, when people say, when people put it in the same category as something like Matrix or something, then that's the thing about it that kind of like makes me feel baffled, like I'm in the Twilight Zone or something.
No, you're in the you're in the Blind Side Zone.
One thing I found baffling is the title. Like, why is it called Wanted?
Yeah, I have no idea.
It doesn't make any sense to me.
I mean, it's based on a comic book series. So the comic book series were also called Wanted. Maybe there's something in the comic book that kind of explains the title, that they don't have it in the movie.
Yeah, I have feel no like idea.
It should be called Hummingbird Heart.
That would have been so much better.
That would be a sick title, Hummingbird
Heart. Or Angelina Jolie's ass. Just have that title. Just you get to see 45 minutes into the movie, you get to see Angelina Jolie's ass. That's the name of the movie.
All right, cool. So it seems like, Mike, you're a bit on the fence. You don't think it's that bad. I don't love it, but you know, I think it's just a turd in a long line of turds. And Ege, you think it's probably one of the worst films ever made.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, cool. So Ege, what do you reckon the best scene in the movie was?
Yikes, that's really hard to pick. But yeah, the first scene in the grocery store when Angelina Jolie first pops up and uses this really cool gun that can kind of bend around corners and stuff with like this mirror system so you can shoot people that are hiding around the corner. That was kind of cool. And then it just turns into this ridiculous film with where people get secret messages from textile machines and stuff. So yeah, that would be the only thing I could think of.
Mike?
To a certain degree, I enjoyed the last action sequence just because it was so over the top that if you just, and I hate making that excuse, but if you just stop thinking about it and just enjoy the visuals and the crazy fighting, that was my favorite scene, I think.
Yeah, I think I like the scene where they first tie him up to the chair. You know, he's still like relatively wet behind the ears or completely wet behind the ears, and the guy ties him up. Are you okay? Does that feel comfortable? And he's like, yeah, that's fine. And then he proceeds to beat the living shit out of him. I like that idea of this kind of trial by fire training that he's about to become one of the hardest assassins in the world. So, you know, he has to go through this grueling ordeal. I think the actual training itself turned out to be a bit of a letdown, but the lead-in looked promising.
Yeah, I could kind of see that.
So, well, this is going to be, everyone, go easy on this one. Let's not trample it to death. But what's your worst scene?
Every single scene where we see his boss, which is probably the most annoying ear-grating character that I've ever seen in my life in any movie that I can think of. It's even worse than, like, Chris Tucker from Fifth Element.
I thought he was good.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but he's known to be, like, this annoying character, right? Yeah, Chris Tucker, I guess.
Jar Jar Binks.
Yeah, there you go. Worse than Jar Jar Binks. That's a better analogy. But yeah, anytime, I mean, I understand that.
Black and Envy.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh my God.
I guess there's a lot of them. But yeah, I mean, I guess the character is supposed to be annoying, but there's a difference between someone who's annoying for the character and someone who's really annoying for the audience. And I think in this case, it was just this horribly written, horribly acted, terribly over-the-top, ridiculous character.
Yeah, I think the best friend as well was just absolutely ridiculous as well. And the girlfriend, they were just these two-dimensional characters. Yeah. And actually, most of the characters, Common was two-dimensional, and whoever else was in that movie. And Morgan Freeman, the face that he pulled on the final frame of the movie.
It's ridiculous.
What the hell was that?
But remember when, I think it was last year, when we were talking about how bad this movie was, and then you said something about Common being in it, and I didn't even know. Like, I totally forgot that Common was even in that movie.
Yeah, well, he was, and he sucked. So
yeah, that's
fun.
True.
What would you... Oh, sorry, Mike, go on.
Oh, well, to me, it goes back to what I was saying before about it explaining too much, maybe, and it's a scene where Angelina Jolie is talking about how this one time people didn't follow the directives of the loom, and they didn't kill a guy, and that guy turned out to kill her parents, or something like that. And it just seemed like such a... They were trying to answer the audience question, like, why would anybody listen to a loom? And it just seemed so heavy-handed and ridiculous.
Yeah, it's just a way to just find a way to explain, oh, these killers are actually killing real bad guys. But then at the same time, all you take from that story is that this one time they didn't kill this one guy and he turned out to be a psychopath. But that doesn't explain all the other people they have to kill who, for all intents and purposes, might be innocent.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a completely pointless scene.
Yeah, they've got about 1,000 MacGuffins in that film, so...
Yeah.
And then what would you do differently if you had the choice again? Like, how would you make this film differently?
I would just take out every single element in it that tries too hard to become Fight Club and amp up the action and just make it a completely two-dimensional, goofy, stupid action that is completely aware of itself. Kind of like something like Hot Fuzz or Shoot 'Em Up that knows that the concept of reading secret messages from textile machines and bending bullets is just stupid and just treats it like that instead of actually taking it seriously.
Yeah, I'd certainly spend a lot more time deepening or fleshing out the world in which these guys are about to, you know, out of which the characters themselves emerge, because if you can give some kind of background context and like lure the characters in and build the story, then I'm willing to make more of a leap as to who these characters are and give a shit about this assassins kind of collective. But really, I felt like I was being forced into this world and it made no sense. And it was very unrealistic, but not so unrealistic that I could actually believe it.
Mm. What do you think, Mike?
I would start by giving the movie an actual bad guy or an antagonist because they change it around so much that you don't really know, like, he's hunting this guy, but it turns out to be his father. But once he's dead, there's still, it should be over. Or once he knows it's his father, the antagonist is neutralized. But then it turns out to be Morgan Freeman. And it's just like, it keeps switching and you can't really root for a guy to get vengeance against somebody that doesn't really exist.
And so the final question is, you know, you're about to go into, well, you're in the video store, you're reaching for Wanted. Ege is going to show up and slap your hand away. What film is he going to point you in the direction of instead?
I'll actually slap you too, just okay. So you can get that point. Or tie you to a chair and start beating the crap out of you. But for even considering renting this movie. I would go with, it's not in video stores yet, the new version of Judge Dredd, which is as grimy and gritty and dirty and even more violent than Wanted, but at the same time, it offers this very simple, violent, crazy action movie, and it does it in a much more superbly stylized and a much better way. And also, I would say, yeah, like I mentioned, films like Shoot 'Em Up and Hot Fuzz, which know they're goofy and are almost self-parodies, I think are a lot more fun to watch.
How about you, Mike?
This is a stupid choice, I think, because I think it's an equally stupid movie. But I think that's, if somebody's like, oh, I want to see a stupid action movie, I would say Firestorm with Howie Long. Like, I haven't seen that since it came out, but I remember enjoying it for the same reasons that people enjoy this movie. But it doesn't take itself so seriously. It has a lot of ridiculous over-the-top scenes. And if you're going to waste your...
what with Howie who?
Firestorm with Howie Long.
Isn't he like, wasn't he like a wrestler or something?
A football player.
Football player. Oh, perfect.
He does the Monday Night Football stuff now, I think.
Yeah, and it's like from 98, 97, something like
that. Yeah, but it's like this movie should be utterly forgettable. It didn't make a lot of money, but it made its money back, and it was fun, but forgettable.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, like any stupid, simple action movie that doesn't try too hard to be credible.
I think I saw that what was that film? Is it called The Long Kiss Goodnight?
Yeah, like that.
I haven't seen the whole thing. I've only watched it up until I think about a third of the way through. And I've always liked the first part of the film that I've seen. And you know, it is about like a housewife who's pretty much leading a mundane life. She's actually enjoying it. She's not in any way like rebelling against it or calling herself a loser. Yeah. But all of a sudden fate comes along and asks her to step up or has her realize, oh, what's the other one that turns out the David Cronenberg film with
History of Violence.
History of Violence. It's a similar type of setup, true. But I haven't seen it, but I hear good things.
In the Longest Goodnight, it turns out that she had amnesia, so she forgot about her past as a contract killer or something.
And she turns out to be Russian, right?
Yeah, that's true. That's interesting. That's true. She turns out to be Russian, I think, as far as I can remember. And in the History of Violence, I guess this is more of a spoiler alert, because in Longest Goodnight, the trailers and everything show you that she has amnesia. But in History of Violence, it turns out that he does remember that he is a ruthless contract killer. He just hides it and goes out and gets a family and gets a normal life.
So the point I'm making is that I would recommend two films I've never seen over one that I have.
That's true. That makes sense.
Again, thank you so much for joining us this week. The films that we reviewed, our underrated film was Ghost Dog, starring Forest Whitaker, and the overrated film was Wanted, starring Angelina Jolie and Morgan Freeman. Come join us next week as we review two films. Again, one that's overrated, one that's underrated. Michael Manziello and Ege Kozak, thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.
My name's Kareem Mohsen. Take it easy.